This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stacking Pennies presented by Mobile One. Back to back Buescher. Holy moly, who'd have thunk it? But RFK back in victory lane. 2 weeks in a row holding back MTJ and that fast hot rod. He had an MTJ's coming back for one more season. We're going to break down all of that in the woe of the week. And also joined by another Aussie trying to come take our lunch money. Brody Kostecki, V8 Supercars points leader, joining us right in studio before his Indy GP debut. This is Stacking Pennies.
Stacking them deep, selling them cheap.
It tastes like gasoline, rubber, and victory.
We're just out here stacking pennies.
Hello, friends. I am Corey LaJoy, driver of the number 7 Chevy Camaro, joined by the normal band of characters, minus one. To my right, Mr. Chuck Bush.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to be back.
It's going good. Nice shirt.
Thanks.
What is that?
Jason Isbell.
Is that a band?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's in the Drive-By Truckers back in the day. He does solo stuff now.
Did the dog ears open for the band?
No. We aren't that good.
Were you on the front? Were you on the battlefront last week?
Is that where you were? 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Did you win?
Yeah.
No, you weren't here last week.
I know. I wasn't
so I didn't
here
know
last
if you
week.
You were in battle.
Because I got
trench foot,
sick.
As Merriman said.
So your immune system was doing battle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. It hit me like Saturday night at like 11 o'clock at night. I just got like, I thought it was just like the heat because we'd been out in the.
Probably the mealworms.
No mealworms this time. We had like good Brunswick stew.
Oh,
for
wow.
Dinner. Like we ate really well this time.
Maybe it was the, what's that fish?
MREs.
Was that fish?
Yeah. Monkfish?
Monkfish stew.
But yeah, yep. From like 2 in the morning until 5 in the morning, no sleep because we were just getting attacked the whole time. You know, it's just
getting attacked.
Yeah.
Did you say, it's just a reenactment, go to bed.
Let me sleep.
We'll do it in the morning.
Like, we're trying to sleep here. Can you guys keep it down? No, they were shooting off flares and like simulated charges. And it was some intense stuff. So
that's what you signed up for, Chuck.
It is. Had a great time.
I laughed. Was it that this week Merriman put in the group chat that somebody messaged him on Instagram?
Oh, yeah. I was just looking at that.
Yeah, I do Battlefields too, so it's cool that my favorite show has one of my favorite guys does reenactments too. And what'd Merriman say?
He said, Jonathan discovered you on the podcast with Corey, which is great, by the way. I'm a fellow motorsports industry, worked at Hyperco. I've worked in motorsports most of my life. When I found out you reenacted, I had to reach out. You're not the only one out there. A bigger insult than Jimmy not getting every vote is being mistaken as Chuck Bush.
And Chuck, you might have shot that guy, so he might not listen to the show anymore. So that'd be unfortunate. Could we just go ahead?
Oh, you want to hear? I heard a good one today.
What'd you hear?
The Kelsey's brothers.
Yeah.
They have a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they said they won an award that we were also up for.
Really?
So they won the award.
Which one?
I don't know.
Best podcast
of
all time?
Was it the hashtag one?
Sure. Okay. Whatever award. They won it. And they were like,
were we second?
They were like, we won it. And these were the other people in there. And they were like, this one. And some Corey Leje. I don't know what he does. And they were like, yeah. Oh, he must be a French race car driver. That's what I'm serious. Must be a French race car driver. I got to find that clip out from somewhere. But Corey Leje.
What's LaJoy, dude? We're American. Get it straight.
That way. You're a French race car driver, apparently. How was Le Mans?
Le Mans was, I don't even know French.
I thought that was hilarious. And we beat out
Leje.
Stacking Pennies with Corey.
Well, hey, it's still a big deal, I guess. I don't know if we're the same. We lost, but.
We're a nominated podcast, so you know.
Like, yes.
Award nominated.
You got to be in it to win it, right? Yeah.
That's right. Somebody else was in it to win it this weekend. Chris Buescher, come out of nowhere.
RFK, both cars
love
in the top 5, second week in a row. Totally different racetrack. What they're doing over there is working.
It's working. something else too, confidence. Confidence goes a long way of just what you're doing on the simulator, what you're looking at on simulation.
Brad hasn't cut any corners. They've hired great people. They've spent a lot of money to get good people in the door.
Yep.
Brad Keselowski is a championship guy that came from a championship organization.
Knows what
and,
it takes.
You know, but it's like the old song. You ever heard the, I'm going on a bear hunt? You ever heard that one yet with
sure,
your kid?
I'm sure Chuck sings that.
Well, it's you can't go. He says you can't go over it. You can't go under it. You got to go through it. Mm. And he went through it.
Yeah.
Like Brad had a rough go at it there.
Yeah.
And they're coming out the other end and they didn't fudge it.
I mean, who'd have had Chris Buescher being a deep playoff contending team right now? Love to see it.
I mean, if you listen to this show, I feel like very confident in saying we have gone on record saying that we felt like they were close to breaking through several times. And then when they did, they broke through. Like it wasn't just like, oh yeah, they won a race. Cool. Yeah. Back to back.
Well, with this,
two different types of tracks.
Well, with this car, man, if you are off, you're searching, and then you find a little bit of a glimpse and you get a little bit of confidence and you start figuring out some tire data or just some sort of feel your driver's looking for, and you can hit on it and go on a streak. I mean, we see that with the 19 car right now. He is strong everywhere they go.
Dude, and that's what I was going to talk about. Like, it sucks when you have a car as dominant as the 19 does. It's like, okay, just execute and we're going to go win this thing. And they do. They come out behind the 17. They're wheeling him down. He gets there. And that's what was so impressive. Chris aero blocked him perfectly. And, like, he wasn't dirty, but he made it to where he was a pain in the ass and got the air just on him right. And he drove on the win. And I was wondering, because I wasn't there, what did the cloud cover late in the race have anything to do? Did it change? Do you think it changed Martin's car?
The air temp cooled down probably 25 degrees.
Yeah, because they were talking like rain was maybe going to come in.
I got out of the car. I'm like, holy cow, it's cold. It was like freezing cold. It was like 50.
And when you guys started, it only happened in like the last, 80? If it seemed like it only happened in like the last run.
It got overcast and got really cold. So the track locked right down, got tight.
Freaking Michigan.
It was interesting. Obviously, we ran, what was it, 80% of it on 75% of it? No, we weren't quite to half.
You weren't to half.
40% of it on Sunday. I'm glad because I feel like our car was capable of much more than where we were at on Sunday afternoon when they started to catch some rain. Had a little bit of track position. Gave it up trying to race your guy.
I got phone calls, text messages. I flipped on our radio. So I had flown back to New Jersey on Sunday, and our flight got delayed. So I was flying and landed in Philly. Race was on rain delay when I landed, and I just put it on in the car. I was driving back from Philly to the beautiful Jersey Shore. And I was kind of flipping between MRN and listening to Blaney's radio, listening to your radio some, listening to the guys that were pitting just to kind of hear what they were saying. And I flipped on the Blaney's radio, and he just said, Corey LaJoy every week or whatever he said. And I was like, oh, man. And then it started raining and my phone started going off. And I'm like, hey, guys, I don't drive the 7. Yes, we are good friends, but like,
I'm not even there. Yeah, you're not riding along.
I'm in
with
New
me.
Jersey trying to go to Wawa.
Not even in Michigan. Trying to eat a Wawa meatball sup.
Yeah, what the hell? But talk through that because it seemed like. It's interesting for me, right? Because yeah. Like I told you, it's something that you'll have to get through because the better you run, the more people are going to be pissed off at you. Because when you're running 25th and back, nobody's really going to be mad. So the better you run, right, the more that you're going to get punched in the helmet and yelled at.
Preferably not.
Preferably
yes,
not, but
that's
yeah.
That's usually
but,
what happens.
Dude, nope. Who's gotten in the most fights? Joey Logano, Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin.
Yeah.
Kyle Busch, right?
I mean, those guys are racing for wins, but yes, I understand your case.
But it's because they're racing up front all the time.
Racing hard, yeah.
They're not fighting for 25th.
Right. So we had a good car. We were edgy all weekend, spun out in practice, just trying to find the limit. Luckily, didn't get any substantial damage. We changed the bumper cover and let it eat, I think, right rear toe link. Started from the back, drove to like, I don't know, 19th right off the bat. I'm like, ooh, this thing's really good. Got some track position, got a stage point. Stage one to finish 10th, put rights on it. We were like 7th or 8th. Run the top in 1 and 2, big run on the back stretch. And the way Michigan is, specifically on restarts, is if you have a run, let's just say you get a run on somebody and you don't use it. You enter the corner kind of behind them and you get gummed up and you get some dirty air. If you commit to not passing that guy, then your momentum's broke and you're now lost momentum to that guy in front of you, and the guy behind you now has a run. And more than likely, he's going to take the run and do the thing he should have done the slide. He's going to do the slide job on you of what you should have done the guy before, and now you're three positions back from where you should have been. So that was the precedent set early. And we saw guys with, you know, somebody in a very similar situation as I was, with a little bit less capability in car control, spin out and back in the fence. Luckily for me, I have very good control of my car. I didn't crash. So when I caught the 12.
Tell me about, yeah, Kyle Busch.
Yeah, I hate it for him. He was on the rollback.
It was a different, it was a similar looking, but a very different move.
But he crashed and I didn't crash.
Hey.
So go down the backstretch and I have a big run on the 12. I'll get to.
What did he call you?
Pain of the
pain of the copy.
So
you're taking jabs because he called you pain of the I see it.
I don't forget.
Hey.
And I'll be a pain of the on microphone too. But he backed himself in the fence. I didn't crash. He was watching the race from the couch on Monday.
Oh, boy.
So down the backstretch, I get a run. He is also not playing kickball too, so
okay.
Forget about it.
Okay.
Down the backstretch, I'm like, I've got a run here. I'm going to take it. So my car handled pretty good on the bottom. Shot the bottom, lifted like normal, a little bit of brake. And there was – he was in – when I went back and looked at it, he was in my blind spot. So I had no idea where he was at, if I was clear, not clear. And that's a bad angle for TJ, clearing it or not. So I drove in there with the intention of clearing him
into
and sliding
one.
Into three.
Okay. Yeah, that is a bad angle.
So in hindsight, I should have just went up there and taken it.
Yeah.
But I thought in the moment that it was too tight. I didn't want to be a dick and throw a tight slide job on him, take his air, shut him off, and end up him in the high groove. Well, going back on SMT and looking, once he realized how short and shallow he drove it in, he realized I was clear, and he literally went back to wide open to get back to my right rear corner, put me in a bad aero spot, got loose, chased it up the hill. Luckily, we both didn't crash. You know, he catches me, gives me a door, rightfully mad because we both lost 10 spots. So we get out, and we're like walking different directions. I was like, that was close. He goes, what, when you drove me up in the weeds? I'm like, no, when you drove it on my right rear quarter panel when I was clear, and then you about spun me out, and we ended up in the weeds. So there was a little bit of, like, disagreement, obviously, from his windshield and from my windshield. But by the time, after about 5 minutes of our conversation, I was like, what do you want me to do there? If I drive it in the corner with the intention of clearing you, do you want me to would you rather me just chop you and throw a tight slide job and you'd be mad at me for that? Or would you rather give me a lane, rather you have a lane to get to my back to my right rear corner and potentially make me loose and we both end up losing spots? Which one would you rather me do? Because that was the situation that I put in. And he kept saying, well, you drove it in 5 car lengths deeper, which I was like, I don't really think I did. So I went back and looked it up on SMT and we lifted at the exact same spot. So just because he used some brake, he was a little bit conservative getting to 3, allowed me to roll that much distance on him. And if I would have known that I was completely clear like I was, I would have just taken it instead of throwing a 95% slide job and would have pissed him off for that.
Dumb
as opposed
question.
To all of us losing 10 spots. That's dumb. What I will have done next time.
Dumb question. So SMT tells a pretty good tale, but my question is this, and this is merely just a question. I'm not trying to play devil's advocate. If you had a run and you're going, just for the sake of numbers, 10 mile an hour faster, and you lift at the same exact point, if you're rolling 10 mile an hour faster and you lift at the same point, would it not appear that you drove in the corner deeper? So saying that you lifted at the same point, it could be a little bit like, because if you lifted at the same point and you're going the same speed, you wouldn't have gotten so far up on them.
Correct.
But I think what you know, his point was all of is like, hey, dude, if you're going to throw the slider, throw it.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing you can do is throw a short slider, and that's what you said. You're like, I threw a short slider, because he said even like if he would have just done it, I could have just crossed him up and we could have went on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help the fact that it happened and then the caution came out, so there was no time to cool off, because the next day he's like, hey, I'm still going to play kickball. You know, we just had to talk about it. But yeah, I mean, that's
like
that's
Priest
just
and I
racing.
Talk on Saturday. Like we're cool. It's just you race. You get aggravated with each
that's
other.
That's it.
And you keep it moving.
I'd rather you guys get aggravated with each other than just be honky-dory the whole time.
Yeah.
But how do you, in that moment, determine, like, all right, this is when I'm going to take that run, or this is when I'm, like, what is it in that moment that this is now when I'm going to
do? At that point in the race, I think we were, let's just call it 60 laps in. I don't know. We have good track position. up to that point in the race, the precedent was already set that if you don't use the run, the guy behind you is going to use it and then slide you. So if you don't want to get slid, you better slide somebody else, or you're just going to lose track position because it's so hard to pass. You have to take the run when you get it. So at that point in the run, we had good track position. There was a gap in between the 2 and the 12. I'm like, okay, I can get there. And I threw a 97% slide job and gave him the opportunity in the lane to get back out there. It wasn't like I was out of control getting to that point. I was out of control when he rolled back out there and took the air off my door. So it's in the future, I just, if I don't see him in that blind spot, TJ and I go and clean that up of like, okay, you know what my intention is getting in there. You tell me to take it when it's clear.
Do you say down the backstretch, slingshot, engage,
no, shake and bake?
Or you say shake and he goes, and bake, and he knows what you're doing?
I don't think so.
So
hand motions.
So do you get
slingshot,
so
slingshot.
Yeah, in the future, you complete the run. If you're him in that situation, what do you do? Like, what do you think? Like, where's your frustration coming from?
He didn't anticipate me getting in as hard as I did and being able to clear him. I don't think that he drives it back to – I don't think he floors it in the middle of the corner prior to the middle of the corner if there's a 9 or a 23. I think that it's something a little bit of like the 7 car is not supposed to pass me.
Saying if there's a 9 or a 23 on the door.
On the door of my car, I don't think that he drives back to my right rear quarter panel. He gives him the spot. And then, like Kyle Busch said, it's just a different way of racing. You race somebody down in the corner previously that somebody would have gave you that spot. And then you get it back later in the race. So a little bit of that's racing around him more often if he gets used to, or if he thinks, you know, it's like, okay, he's respected enough, or I'm used to seeing him up here racing enough to give him a spot because I know I'm going to race him. But generally speaking, he doesn't see me up there racing a lot. So if I roll him and he leaves a lane open, he's going to put me in a bad spot and make me lift. So like I said in my interview on TV, like I'm going to learn that those guys, up until you learn and get earn some respect from those guys from racing up there more often, they will put you in very bad spots.
Yeah.
So if you want to be in those spots, you better be more defensive, and so you don't get put in one of those spots.
Yeah, I don't think Ryan, like, I've been with Ryan for damn near a decade now, off and on. And I will say this, he's gotten used up more than he's used people up. He's one of the cleaner race car drivers.
I'd agree.
Out there. And, you know, you've said that you feel like he puts you in bad spots sometimes. And I don't know if that's just because of his code. Like, he's got a pretty strong code of like, how to race each other.
Yeah, racing etiquette.
He's got very, very good racing etiquette. Sometimes, for who you're racing around at times, it might be too good.
Yeah.
Because like it seems like we'll have a great road course race going. If there's Sonoma, Point and Case, right? We got spun out running fifth, and then we were 30th and got spun out again. Mm. And it's like, what? Why are we backwards?
And freaking road courses.
But he's raised and taught to race by, you know, one of the cleanest guys that's ever done it as well by Dave. But it's funny because you look at it like, it depends on what truck you're standing on or what car you're in or how, you know, what your code is. And everybody's different because the 8 was mad at Ryan.
Yeah. When the 8 just
eight
drove
was
it
like
in there way too
way,
deep.
Way shallower than you and just tried to move him up and he lost it and wrecked. He was mad at Ryan like, well, back in the day, he'd have given me that spot. So that's how he thinks he should be raced.
Yeah.
And then you go up to him like, hey, man, what do you want me to, like, teachable moment, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
So you're thinking of it different. And Ryan's like, this is how – it's three different, very different opinions, and it's not just three of them. It's 40 of them throughout the field.
For sure.
So that's why I think we have been in a very big change in the guard. We've talked about it a ton on this show how, you know, the level of respect has gone down, even with the guys that are buddies, hence Larson and Denny, hence you and Ryan Preece, right?
And
like,
Blaney.
I would consider you guys buddies. You and Blaney, you just – everybody's trying to figure out what that code is because the old code's gone, right? So guys like Kyle Busch and even like Denny will talk about it. He doesn't always preach it, but he'll talk about it. And Harvick, it's like, hey, when they were getting yelled at by freaking Terry Labonte,
right?
This is how we race a certain way. And now it's changed. So there's a whole mixed bag throughout the field of how they race each other, which is you have to learn each other and you don't race in the top 10 with a car that can keep going forward. You haven't done that.
Often. Yeah.
So you know how to race against Eric Jones, right? When you're racing in the 15th to 25th area.
Right.
That's just, it's something that you.
Well, and there's also tendencies of guys, right?
Like, that, and that's exactly what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, there's tendencies of guys.
You learn
because
the tendencies of further
even,
you run forward.
You know, even racing around, you know, Denny a little bit, if I'm having a good day and he's having a little off day, he's not rolling out to your right rear quarter at that spot, at that point in time of the race, which was a little bit surprising to me that he did, right? Like,
so now you'll know different, like, okay, if he does that, I won't do this, right?
Exactly.
And that's how you learn. Okay, so if.
Well, there's some guys that'll chase you down in the corner and keep it on your right rear quarter, and there's some guys that don't. And it's all situational.
Yeah.
And obviously, if the pay window's opened up, then everybody's racing everybody really hard. But just, you know, another learning experience. Luckily, we both didn't crash. He was able to recover for a top 10 day, and we had a top 15 day. So that was overall really good.
Do me a favor. For the sake of my data usage on my phone, take it easy on the 12 car. Because my phone can't take – I'm going to run out of whatever data usage I have.
I'll buy you some minutes.
I did find it very funny, though. Like, when that happened, I opened up Facebook and hit the, you have memories for today. And 4 years ago to the day that you guys got into it, you were guest hosting on Glass Case and had on the plastic box of feelings shirt.
Yeah.
Maybe it was fake.
It was meant to be.
It was fake. It was meant to be. Yeah.
I'm too old to believe in coincidences anymore, Chuck. It was meant to be. Yep, so I'm glad they rebounded for a top 10 day.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Do your pennies stretch as far as they used to? Most likely it doesn't. Here's why. It took 200 years for the U.S. to print its first $5 trillion. Today, Washington has done that in just 3 years. The problem, every new dollar makes each one of your dollars worth less, robbing you and every other hardworking American. You can stop this cycle of robbery by diversifying your IRA or 401k into gold, an asset that has stood the test of time. Our new sponsor, Birch Gold Group, has helped tens of thousands of Americans protect their retirement savings with physical precious metals. Now you can too. Get a free info kit on gold right now by texting the word Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, to 989-898. With an A-plus rating with the BBB, you're in good hands with Birch Gold. So get your free info kit by texting Corey to the number 989-898. Go check them out. Put some pennies in some gold. What else we got?
It's a big week for Hall of Fame stuff. That was, Michigan
was sour, bro. I was sour.
I understand why you were sour. I also want to say that was a cool room to be in.
Chuck's one of the ones that did.
Are you one of the four?
No.
Red alert.
I'm saying the room seeing Donnie Allison, excited he was.
How pumped up was he?
Oh, so pumped up.
Was he?
Yeah. And then both Chad and Jimmy, like, they came in to do their press conference, and like, you see Jimmy walk around the corner, and you could tell he was like this
elated.
Yeah, and it like you could see the emotion and the happiness on his face, and same with Chad.
Hang on a second. So, was everybody that was on the ballot there?
No,
and
no,
what I was gonna say that would get awkward.
What are they, like, in a waiting room, like you're at the dentist, like Mr. Knaus and Johnson? Please head.
They were in a separate room. Donnie was out in the main room when it was announced.
Was he like eating a bagel, like spreading some cream cheese? Like, I'm in the Hall of Fame.
He was sitting there, and like Dale Inman was a little bit far down from him. And, you know, they, like, you see them kind of look over and be like, yeah, all right. Hell yeah. And, his take was to be now, like, I forgot what year he said it was that he got his first NASCAR license, but he put it in perspective of like to be in the list with those guys that, you know, are already enshrined and to have been a part of this sport from the 50s to now, like to see the growth. He was like, it's just an honor to be a part of that and to like know that you're recognized for that.
I love Donnie Allison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love him. I did not expect it.
No, but I think that helmet needs to go in the Hall of Fame. Because
it was smashing Cale Yarbrough in the head.
Was it Donnie that threw the helmet or was it Bobby?
Bobby had Cale by like the leg.
I think Donnie.
And Donnie was swinging the helmet.
Yeah.
He said that Cale was hitting his head on his helmet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who'd you Kale expect if it wasn't Donnie? Who'd you expect?
I don't know who else was in that.
I'm still on the Neil Bonnet.
Tim Brewer. Yeah. Jeff Burton, Carl Edwards, AJ Foyt, Harry Gant, Harry Hyde, Banjo, Ralph Moody, Larry Phillips, Ricky Rudd.
God, there's so many good people on that list, dude.
Everybody was like everybody that was working on that day was like, all right, who you got? Who the three you got in? Everybody was Jimmy and Chad Urlach. Should have been.
Unanimous.
But everybody was thinking Banjo Matthews would have been.
You know what? It was probably the producer of Stack and Pennies that didn't vote him because he ain't come on the show yet. I told Nick to don't give him a little box check. Vote for somebody else.
That's what it was.
There was some of the debate prior to it apparently was.
Not he was active too recently.
Yeah. But I mean.
I don't know. I feel like when that guy got out of at Phoenix. 5 years ago, whatever it was, four years ago, they put a jacket right on that guy.
So at what point, let me open a can of worms. At what point does Ron Malik go in the Hall of Fame? So for people that don't know who Ron Malik is, right? He was the car chief the lead mechanic.
On all seven championships.
On all seven championships, with Jimmy and Chad the whole time. So you can't measure, he's not a crew chief or he's not a driver. There's probably not stats for him, but like, when you look at what he's done for the sport, the people that has come up, the people, especially just in Hendrick alone, that have come up behind him, become great car chiefs, gone on to have great careers that he trained, right? That's immeasurable. And then just the impact that he had on Hendrick Motorsports Mechanics, where it gave him a great award. But like, where do we draw the line? Why is he not going to, you think he'll be on the ballot one day? What does that look like?
There is a possibility for that. I mean, you have a finite list of.
What if we made the case, Chuck? What if we made the case that there needs to be a. Because it can't be crew chiefs, because crew chiefs are like. But I mean, in the main ballot, right?
But like, I'm not saying there needs to be a mechanic or a picker guy every year, but like the top 1% of the 1%, like Ron Malik.
Okay, well, let me.
Deserves to be
devil's advocate to that.
Yeah.
What about pit crew guys? Like
well, what. That's a great point you bring up.
I'm just saying, they're athletes in the sport.
I have one for you. I got one for you.
Okay.
So, what qualifies you to be in the NASCAR Hall of Fame? What do you have to have? What are the numbers you have to have?
Good ones.
But do you have to have good numbers?
20-plus wins? Is it a championship? What is it?
Donnie Allison does not have that 20-plus wins.
Yeah.
But if you take a look at, you know, impact on the sport and what, you know, you have done for the sport outside of just wins.
So when you look at like, but that's a great point, even like Ron Malik.
Right.
So let me read you stats and you tell me if this belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Are you reading Ron Malik's stats?
No,
because
this is a total different guy. This is a guy you've probably never heard of.
Okay.
Let me read you these stats and tell me if he needs to be in the Hall of Fame. 4 Daytona victories, 3 Brickyard 400s, 4 Southern 500s, 3 All-Star race wins, 1997 Winston Million winner, 5 championships, 1994 Unical pit competition winner, 2005 individual pit competition winner, 18 total rings, right? Part of the Rainbow Warriors. He was part of the group that got taken to Yates, right? Mike Trower, 27-year career changing tires.
Yeah.
Right? He won the freaking Unical pit competition and the pit competition in downtown Charlotte.
Yeah.
Like 11 years separate from each other.
No,
that's longer than
94 and 05.
94, yeah. So that's 11 years, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's longer than the span of some pit crew guys.
Yeah.
Why is he not even – why is he not on the ballot? Because that's better than almost every driver that is in there. Like, that's better – I'm not f***ing on Jeff Burton.
No.
It's better than Jeff Burton. That's better than Carl Edwards. That's better than any of those guys have ever dreamed of doing.
I think
– how do you raise the how do you get the conversation started to create a way that those guys could get recognized?
And that's the question.
That's what we just did.
No, but that's the question. Like, I'm not coming at it as like, okay, we need to have a picker guy and we need to have somebody from the garage in every week. But it's like, you know, we all talk about NASCAR being a team sport, right? Everybody wants to talk about.
I do think there is a place to recognize in the Hall of Fame that's not a crew chief, that's either a road mechanic and or pit crew member every year.
We have the Squire Hall Award, right?
Where they
talk about broadcasters and their impact on the sport.
Yeah.
I'm 100% on board with the NASCAR Hall of Fame has only been around since what?
Correct.
2010?
Yeah.
So you look at a baseball, football hall, like they've enshrined hundreds, right? Like you go to the baseball hall of fame and there's just people on people on people on people. I think that there is room. And, you know, we've adjusted the ballot now to what? Two modern era, one pioneer, and then the landmark award. I think that there is room somewhere in that discussion to have a crew, road crew, pit crew, whatever you want to.
Yeah, road warrior.
Right.
Well, I don't think it needs to be that, right? Like, with numbers like that and what Mike Trower has done, there needs to be – he needs to have his own deal, and he needs to be in the NASCAR Hall of Fame just along Richard Petty and all those guys, because it's not a hey, here's a road crew award. Here's a mechanics wear award. It's like guy's earned his right. That guy's won the races and earned his right and was so sought after in his time. And my point is this, like, it'd be like going to NFL Hall of Fame and they only induct
quarterbacks
and head coaches, right? Because everybody wants to talk. And I don't know that we're there yet, because we've only been, the NASCAR Hall of Fame is relatively new in the span of time. But I guess what my point is everybody wants to sit there and talk about it's a team sport until it's time to think about accolades. Then it's not, right? It's team sport. It's my talent. I thank my guys. I thank the guys back at the shop until it's not. And that's where, like, the guys in the garage area are doing, they're dedicating their life as much, if not more.
In time spent.
Like I could sit here and argue, and I'm not trying to get on a soapbox and say that.
I don't think anybody's in opposition.
Opposition of it, but it's like, okay, let's take a look at it. It's hard for the 90s, unless you have a career like Mike Trower,
right?
Because we didn't have rosters. And we didn't keep numbers on all that. But now that we have rosters and roster limits, it's easier to, okay, this guy won these races. Just like as a driver, because we didn't keep stats on it.
So your pioneers for that, not pioneers in the sense of but if you look at your Glenn and Leonard Wood, like, you know, they're going in not just for the driving stuff, but what they did for
the whole sport.
The whole sport and evolving the pit stop.
Yeah.
You know, Chad Knaus, Rainbow Warrior, does all that stuff. You're like, it. So it's represented, but right now, like you're saying, if you make it to a crew chief, then you can get in. But that modern era, like the true modern era of the 90s and on, where the pit stops became professional.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, Kyle Petty, you're going to pit the car this week because, you know, your dad's running, so you're going to be on the crew. Once it became professional, I think that's where you can start drawing that line.
Well, and the same thing with like the two guys that I would advocate for right off the bat is the only two that really just stick out in my mind, obviously Ron Malik, because, you know, he's an integral part of that team, and I can't make the argument, right? You don't have Jimmy Johnson without Chad Knaus, right? And you might not have Chad Knaus, Jimmy Johnson without Ron Malik. So he was part of it.
The car chief is the one that's pushing and pulling and getting all the tricks on that thing.
Car chief's the first one in and the last one to leave.
That's it.
Right? And if the rear end mechanic leaves something loose and it falls off, it's the car chief's ass.
Yeah.
Right? So he's the –
that guy.
Yes. He's putting the pen to paper.
Yep.
So – and just the way he conducted himself and how he left the sport, right? It's not measurable on paper what he's done, but the impact and what he left to Hendrick Motorsports, you know, as a standard.
Well, I think – the majority of the voting committee would agree on that.
Yeah.
Right. If a voting committee had the list of guys that you just listed off,
the whole list.
If those guys, just because they weren't forward facing, they were the guys behind the curtains making the thing go, they don't have the
star power.
The star power. But they got the
They have the stats.
And they have the equity built in the sport that they do deserve.
They do deserve
recognition.
Is it something that becomes like the industry leader award or something like that? But I do think that there's room for that, for some to notice somebody on that side, but there's also room for the top of the heap.
Yep.
To be in the Hall of Fame and get a jacket. That's my little spiel, and I hope that, you know, we get to that point. But I'd say let's just get to the point where we get them on the ballot. Because if you put it on the ballot and you look at their numbers, it's going to be undeniable.
Yeah. There you go. If y'all listen upstairs, listen.
I'm coming up there after this. I got something to say.
We also got something to say, too, in Pit Road Boats. And whoa, ho of the week coming right up.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
For me, race day is a great reason to shut down the laptop, put the phone on silent, and simply enjoy the driving. But Mobile One wants to remind you that you can get that same kind of escape any day of the week. How? By simply hopping in your car, rolling the windows down, and hitting the road. No emails, no calls, no work, just freedom. Mobile One, for the love of driving. Pit Road Boats, and woes, a big woe out of that 45 team this week. What happened?
That is the woe of the week for sure. It's tough, man, because
I feel like how many times has the Tyler Reddick had some woes that cost him a dub this year?
Bro, I've had a lot of woes myself, so I ain't throwing darts. I'm just going to explain what happened. The pit road guys will be on me. I'm not doing that. But here's the tough parts about it. If I'm a pit coach, you're waiting on fuel. It's a green flag stop at Michigan, right? Get it tight, get it right. And he's been on pit road. He was the tire changer on the 26 Crown Royal car when I was just holding the pit sign. Right? Like not even pitting yet. Brian Bottomley's been around a long time, and I don't know what happened. There's a list of things that when you go in and hit the lug nut, if it doesn't catch right away, either it doesn't catch, your gun's going the wrong way, you miss it. There's a list of things that could happen. I don't know exactly what happened, but it didn't grab right away. Nathan leaves, Brian kind of waves his hand but tightens it up, and he felt like it got tight on the ground. They go around, this is where I have a problem. Like if I was a pit coach, when you go around, do the left side and then they'll stand up and wait, you're waiting on fuel. So like at that point, man, and that with that down in distance, you just got to stay there and get it right. And unfortunately you walk a fine line, tighten it up on the ground, but sometimes they don't tighten up square on the ground and it gets back out on the track and then the nuts spit right off of it. So that's a tough one to swallow. Especially, you know, when you have a shot to win. Green flag stop.
Nashville too, he had a tire fall off.
Dude, it's easy to have a wheel fall off. Like it's,
oh yeah.
And I think you're going to see it happen even more often in the playoffs because people are going to be reaching for time. So it's not a new thing.
Yeah.
And it's not something anybody's immune to. It can happen very quickly. I mean, these incidences, that's what's tough. You know, we're seeing a lot of mistakes across the board on green flag stops. And, you know, even like with us at New Hampshire a couple weeks ago with two tire stops. And these are stops that should be just layups, but the pit track position is so important. And the pit stop is just so intense and so difficult that it's one minor miscue and something like this happens. So yep. I hope the 45 boys can recruit. Tyler was mad on the radio, boy.
Oh, yeah, he was.
He had a different octave in his voice. It was
That's awkward when you get back to the truck.
Yeah.
Because you don't go back to the truck.
You just go back to the motorhome. Yeah. Or you just walk to your rental car and drive in your fire suit to the
It's got to be.
I've done that before. Just walk to the rental car in my fire suit.
I don't want to see anybody.
Nope. Just go back, get on the plane in your fire suit.
I'll change in the front seat of the rental car.
Like, helmet still on, sitting on the plane with a visor down. Like, I don't want to talk to anybody.
Don't look at me. That Fernando Alonso blew up and he was just sitting on that golf cart with his helmet still on.
Yeah.
Or it might have been Kimmy.
Kimmy walked back to his walked back to his yacht
in Monaco in his fire suit.
In his fire suit.
Yes.
And then he just walked back there, changed, and then he was sitting like smoking a butt on his.
Just what a boss.
The dogs of the week, man. The 17 team, we've been talking about these guys. I've been kind of keeping a close watch on them all year. They were the dogs last week. They're the dogs again this week. They executed when it was time. Zach Yeager and Dalton and the boys.
Zach Yeager, is that the guy with the red beard?
Red beard tattoo.
Red dog like Clifford.
Oh, yeah. Them boys getting after it. So, good to see them. Like I said, their third win of the season. Chris Buescher's second. They won the Daytona 500 as well. So, hell of a year for those guys. And, man, that 17 bunch can be a serious threat moving on in the playoffs. They're peaking at the right time. They have a really strong crew. They've got good bonus points now. And they're coming up on road courses, which he's really good at.
I think he's finished in the top 10, like, the last six in a row or something in a road course.
Does Bradley get a win now? Is the heat on?
I don't think he gets a win in the regular season. But going to Bristol, both RFK cars were strong last year there.
I'll say this. I love Brad Keselowski a lot. I've been road course racing with him before.
He's generally behind me.
It was not pretty.
He's generally behind me.
But Watkins Glen, he's got one of the best finishes ever there. So he could – Watkins Glen, he could – like, Daytona. He is phenomenal at Watkins Glen, and I think he's one of the best. He's definitely top five super speedway racers.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Indy road course, I hope he proves me wrong, might not be his cup of tea.
Let me ask this on RFK and all that, like with Brad. If he doesn't get a win, I'm assuming he still views all of this as a success as – based off of what they're building.
Absolutely.
Dude, both cars in the playoffs, two wins in a row, both cars in the top five the last 2 weeks, absolutely also, different racetracks.
And also coming from how they were last year. I mean, they couldn't get out of their own way last year.
What makes that whole team? The dogs of the week.
2 weeks in a row, dogs.
Good job, Brad.
Walking them dogs, Brad.
Brad's turned the puppies into dogs over there, feeding them out of his hand.
Like the beast.
Yep.
Feeding them T-bone steaks.
The last time RFK went back-to-back?
2017.
The last time? 2009? Matt Kenseth?
2010.
Oh, Carl Edwards. Yeah. The last time the 17 went back-to-back was 2009 with Matt Kenseth.
Yeah.
And the last time RFK's won more than one race in a season was 2017. Yeah. That was the stat I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Good for them.
The resurgence.
Don't call it a comeback.
They've been here for years.
They've just been slumbering.
They have.
I want to talk to our guest, Chuck. Guy flew all the way in from Australia to be with us on our podcast. Not SVG. No, no. The guy who's leading him in points, Brody Kostecki, driving for RCR this weekend. He's over here behind the curtain. Let's get him out and get him in studio. Brody Kostecki coming up next.
The one who SVG is chasing.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
All right, guys, it's the guest we've been talking about, the points leader from down under. And it's not SVG. This is the guy who's ahead of SVG in points, coming for our heads this weekend, Brody Kostecki. Long time no see, buddy. Thanks for coming to the studio.
No, thanks for having me. It's like a blast from the past here.
It is, man. I'm excited. I'm excited you're coming banging some fenders with us this weekend. For those that don't know, the Earth and time is a flat circle, because it was 10 years ago. I was wearing a headset like I am right now on the pit box for this freaking guy in Iowa. Like, what do we crew chief? I crew chiefed you half the year. You're in between some guys. I filled in and we had some fun. We had some success. And now we're lining up together at a cup race. And we also live on different sides of the world. So, like, that's bizarre to me just to even, like, say that. And here we are 3 days before we're about to go to Indy and have some fun.
Yeah, definitely. It is, like, pretty interesting, like you say, like, world does go around in full circle. So, yeah, it's obviously good to see you again. And I got to see you a year ago now at Gateway, and then obviously got to see you again when you jumped in the nine. So, yeah, it's full circle, like you said.
And contrary to what people might think, this wasn't like you were sitting on the couch in Australia watching SVG come take our lunch money and go home. And then you were like, hey, I want to come do this too. This deal was already in the works. You said it's been almost a year in the making to try to put this deal together with Mobile X and RCR. So how did this all kind of, your interest coming back to NASCAR in a much more capacity, how'd that start rolling?
Yeah, it sort of started about a year ago. Yeah, when I sort of actually come back and I went to the Indy 500, went to Gateway because it was on the week after, sort of just put my face in front of a few people. And, you know, I wasn't having a great season back home in supercars at that point. We were sort of, I think I was like seventh or sixth in points. So yeah, it's hard to go to people and say, oh, I want to, try to do a road course. And you're obviously not the, the top pick of, the cattle from back home. So yeah, just the goal was just to try to put my name in front of a few people. And I got some really good friends back home that are, friends with some key people at RCR, Dana and Terry Wahoon. So yeah, they put me in front of Richard about a year ago, and he said, oh, let's try and make something work. And yeah, we locked in Indy probably around about 8 months ago now. And
really?
Yeah, so that was really cool to do. And yeah, it wouldn't be possible without Richard and everyone at RCR. So yeah, big thanks to them.
Man, I'm super excited for you. Leading points, V8 Supercars right now. What was the chatter like after the Chicago Street race, seeing one of the best of all time down there in the Supercar Series come win that race? What was chatter in the paddock the following week? Because it looked like, watching some clips of the highlights of the following week, I don't know where y'all went. It was the next weekend. It looked like y'all didn't take it very easy on when he came back.
Yeah, well, it was, obviously the whole sport back home was following, Shane when he come over and raced. It's always good to see your fellow companions go over and do something different. And obviously he had some, great success that weekend. So it was, really good to see. And I was talking a lot to him throughout the weekend and just asking how he was enjoying the experience. And he seemed to, really enjoy it over here. And he is probably one of the greatest of all time back at home. So yeah, it was obviously trying to learn as well, through, what he did over here. And it was just, he got a reality check there when he come back at.
How do you go, though, and not chase that same result? Because that was such an anomaly weekend, first time at a street course in the history of NASCAR. Wet conditions to start, transition to damp, transition to dry, with some parts were still ended up being wet. Felt like it almost went and fell right into his lap. Granted, he had to earn it, but we're going to a place now in Indy where we've got 3 or 4 years of experience, all the Cup drivers. So it's not quite as even of a playing field as it was for his first race. What are some of the...
This is what they're all telling themselves because they got their ass kicked. Like, it was a street course and we're going to... We'll see how he does it. No, I'm just kidding.
He was telling... Let me get to that in a second. But shit, yeah. If both of these guys run 1-2, I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna think about what I'm gonna.
And
do
next, they're gonna be like, well, come to Bristol.
It would be like, and this guy has more oval experience than SVG does. So like, who knows what could happen? But it would be like, you ever seen Cars 3?
I've seen Cars 3.
Well, if you have a 3-year-old, you've watched it about 400 times like I have. It would be like when Jackson Storm comes out of nowhere and wins a race, and then next thing you know, all the other cars are like Jackson Storms. What if this son of a bitch comes in and there's just a bunch of Australians driving everywhere?
You guys all lose your rides, and all those guys come like, over here.
Yeah, all these guys
got to go over there. Yeah, swap rides.
Yeah. I'll be racing in NASCAR Brazil.
That's what's interesting to me, though. You said that the wheels were in motion. Why did you choose Indy over like a Chicago?
Yeah, it was sort of, I think some of the team owners were, you know, not really sure how Chicago was going to go and, you know, how chaotic it was going to be, first street circuit. So, yeah, it was something that, you know, Richard didn't want to do. And obviously they had really good success at Indy Road Course last year, you know, when Tyler was driving. So they knew that they had good equipment for Indy and they, you know, wanted to give me the best chance possible. So, but, you know, like you said, the cards that Shane got dealt are going to be a lot different than what they are this weekend. Yeah. I mean, it's like if you try to put one of us in an oval, we're going to get spanked. It's just something that we don't do. But, you know, street circuits is our bread and butter back home. So
how many, so you said you have 12 weekend events, double headers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes three events.
Yeah, sometimes three or four. Well, Grand Prix race four times one weekend.
How many of those 12 are street courses?
I'd have to be 40% of the season.
Okay.
Yeah, 40-30% of the season. So there's a few of them.
So I saw the text like when you guys were going to Chicago that you had sent Corey just kind of on, you know, how you use the brake.
Oh, bro,
and
I was like, help me. Yeah. Please, God, like, I have no idea like, what to expect.
He's like, look at all this information he sent me to digest, but how much different is it running a street course to a regular road course?
Honestly, your approach is completely different because, you can't, you know, I can go to Indy and go bombing into turn one and learn where my braking marker is, afford to make a mistake. You can't do that at a street circuit because you get penalized. Like you get, you know, the car would be written off. So yeah, that's sort of the biggest thing. And I don't know if you notice it in the race, probably might have the mental fatigue, trying to drive in between walls is just ridiculous. So wears you out a lot, and it's a whole different approach for, you know, myself and other drivers from back home, you know, the street circuit stuff. It won't be easy at Indy, let me tell you.
I mean, you have a lot of runoff. I mean, you can end up in the third hole of the golf course if you really miss one too bad. I mean, we were sitting here talking before, it's like when you looked at the rear suspension and just the overall car of a next-gen car, I didn't know that a completely brand-new car was introduced in the V8 Supercar Series 2, and you just said it is a supercar. So what are some of is it all similar? Is it all the same?
Yeah, the concept is honestly pretty close to a supercar. You know, I think NASCAR actually come to Australia maybe 4 or 5 years ago to, you know, try and learn about our cars a little bit and, you know, maybe adapt a little bit of it. But the main concept of the car is pretty close to a supercar. Obviously, there's a difference between, you know, the NASCARs make more power and there's a diffuser. We don't have that back home. But the main concept of the car is quite similar. You know, sequential, transaxle, it's all pretty close now.
So I found it interesting. There was a comment that had the rednecks a little frazzled that SVG had. He said it offhanded. I don't even think he meant it as a slight, but I think it offended some people. He says anybody in the top 10 of V8 Supercar points could come in and do the same thing. You're leading the points. What do you think?
You've really put me on the spot here.
That's why I asked you.
Choose a side.
Pick a side.
These are the controversial questions that can make or break a driver. Well, I mean,
we can cut it.
And
clip it and put it on social media.
Oh, I don't know what to say here, but I think what he means is back, you know, back home. Like I said to you previously, you know, the cards that he got dealt with at that race. You know, he doesn't go out and win every single race. And, you know, this year, everyone's got the same car and there's been multiple different winners this year. And it's literally closer than ever back home. You know, there's a lot of different guys that, you know, are able to go, you know, win a race back home. So I think he's just, you know, showing his sportsmanship to, you know, us back home. And, you know, I think that's all what he means about it. But yeah, like Indy this weekend is a whole different kettle of fish. You know, you guys have been there before. Yeah, I think it's a whole different scenario.
So you were mentioning that, I asked what your race team comparison was over there in the V8 Supercars, right? Because we kind of talked to SVG, and his is like the Hendrick comparison,
yeah,
right? Like
that's correct.
They've got the people, they got the depth, they've got the resources, they got the manufacturer support. And oddly enough, you said yours is like RFK, mm-hmm. where down a couple of years, but this year you're leading points. You and your teammate are 1-2, found a lot of success this year. But when you, to back to SVG's comment about the top 10, you rise to the level of competition, right? Like you've learned some of SVG's tricks and vice versa. So what are some of the things, because you've raced in the States, you've raced in ARCA, went back to Australia in 2016, mm-hmm. 15. What are some things that you've learned racing at the highest level over there that you were like, ooh, like that's just, I got to start figuring that out. Or I'm going to get left behind.
Yeah, I've actually openly spoken about this and been asked about it. Because, you know, when I went back to Australia, I sort of, you know, went into the junior ranks and, you know, raced through the Super 2 series, what they call there. And it's the development series for the supercar series, and found success quite early. And it was kind of like, oh, where did he come from? But I put, actually, funnily enough, most of my success back to what I did here in the States. You know, the stuff that I was able to experience at a young age and the racing I got to do and was, you know, it's all about experience at the end of the day. And the experience that I got here is something that I couldn't get back home.
Yeah.
And the level of competitiveness here at a young age is so high. Like there's, you know, a bigger population here. And
especially when you were running the E Series.
Yeah.
Right. All those top runners there are in Cup now.
Yeah. Exactly right. So, yeah, it's funnily enough, when you look back on things and, you know, the person that I had to become today or this year to be able to fight for a championship, I put mostly back to what I did here. So,
well, you look at, if you put your career in SVG's V8 supercar careers on paper, right? He's one of the greatest of all time. Yours is trajecting that direction, right? Your number one mission is to win the V8 supercar championship this year, potentially next year, right? To get to a level of being in the same sentence as some of the greats, right? Only 25 years old. I believe Shane's 35. So there's a 10-year gap, 9-year gap.
Damn, you were on East Cars when you were 15?
I was, yeah.
Damn.
I was, yeah.
Yeah, so he's been in this thing for a minute. Don't let the beard fool
you.
I
feel old now.
Like, what is – because it could be potentially clear what SVG's path is. If he has accomplished everything he wants to accomplish over there, he can come over here and have some fun and make some money. Do you stay over there and make your claim in that series? Or like, what does the future pathway for Brody Kostecki look like?
Yeah, I've got a lot of boxes I want to tick, you know, back home. Yeah. You know, obviously we've only just passed the halfway point of our championship back home. And so, yeah, there's still that to run out. And yeah, I've got a lot of things I want to do back home. And yeah, you also kind of have the mentality of coming here as, you know, to come to just take money. It doesn't work like that. Like, it's so competitive here and it's so hard here. You race every single week. So yeah, I don't think you'll have much success here if you take that mentality back here. I think you've still got to put in, you know, the same effort or if not more because you race more. So yeah, I've got a lot of things I want to do back home. And to be honest, we only raced 12 times. So I just want to, you know, broaden out my calendar and race as much as possible.
Yeah. So you mentioned putting forth the effort. A lot of effort goes into preparation for one of these road course races. Mm-hmm. You said you've been in the simulator, the motion sim, I'm sure, mm-hmm. over 10 hours. Mm-hmm. Is that counting the ABT rig over at RCR? Have you done that?
No, I haven't done that yet.
Okay, so only at the GM Tech Center, mm-hmm. you've been in that thing 10 hours.
Yep, I have been.
And since you're coming in with RCR as a key partner, you can probably get to look at William Byron's and mm-hmm. Austin Dillon's and Kyle Busch's. How are you stacking up pace-wise?
Honestly, it is hard to tell pace-wise because of, you know how those things work with the tires and
track grip.
Yeah, you can fudge so many different things, and I haven't been across all that, you know, all that side of things. So I've just been in there. I've kind of just been sitting there. I was in there yesterday for 5 hours straight, and I think my eyes went square. And they just ran me through a whole bunch of setups and trying to you know, I'm trying to learn off them. They're trying to learn off me, and just trying to, you know, grow the partnership. Mm.
Did you? Who's your crew chief?
Justin Alexander.
Okay. Have you been around Andrew Dickinson?
I have been, yeah. I have been,
he's
yeah.
a stay Australian guy. He's
you said that's kind of the catalyst to kind of get the whole ball going.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's a stud. So off topic, his wife and my wife, best friends in high school, so I get to hang out with him quite a bit. I always end up being friends with the Australians. But what does a week of preparation look like for you, like pit practice? Because when SVG came over, right, being fast on the racetrack's one thing, but if you speed on pit road this weekend or you miss your pit box or you have a miscue there,
hard to come back from that.
Especially this weekend where there's no stage breaks and you could pit, you know, once or even twice, whatever we saw last year. It's just going to be a strategy game. So I wonder what that preparation looks like for you this week.
honestly, it's been a really steep learning curve for me. You know, when Shane came over, they gave him, I think, 2 hours at Charlotte Roval to, you know, get accustomed to the car and, you know, just get a feel of it. And I didn't quite get that opportunity after Chicago. So, but
they said no more.
Yeah, I think that was more of the case of it all. So, you know, which I'm fine with. I love a challenge, but I did some pit stop practice today and. It actually hit me yesterday. I was driving on the road and I was doing 45 miles an hour and I went, damn, I got to stop when people are running out in front of me.
Yeah.
Doing 45 miles an hour. It's 40 kilometers an hour back home, which is like 27 miles an hour or something. So that actually hit me yesterday. And it was like, I've got to, you know, stop in front of these guys when I'm running out in front of me. And it kind of like, I got a bit of a fright from it, but I did it today and it wasn't so daunting. They just said, if you run us over, it's our fault. And I went, oh, okay, it makes me feel way better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're being nice. It's a tight pit road, Indy, but I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, to win a cup race, like we talked about the other week, and the show's called Stacking Pennies, but that's what it is now. It's like you're just gaining a little bit here and there, and then once your stack falls over for the day, you can't get it back up.
Yeah.
So that's that'd be exciting to watch. The other question I had is talking about how close the V8 supercars are to our next gen car, is that why we're seeing an influx of you guys want to come over? Or is it just the timing?
No, honestly, I think you know, this car is, you know, being sequential and as well as the transaxle and whatnot, it's not easier for a driver from a different discipline to come over, but it's I guess more inviting. So like I see that, you know, just before I come in here, Mike Rockenfeller's been announced he's driving the 42 this weekend, and he has an amazing resume racing GT stuff.
Corey's roommate or Corey's teammate last year.
Yeah, we were hotel buddies last year.
Oh really?
Yeah. Let me clarify that. We stayed in different rooms.
I didn't mean to say room and say teammate, but it came out roommate.
So we shared a rental car back and forth to the racetrack. And we stayed, I don't know, like in Seneca, which is like an hour and 15 minutes away. I just loved listening to him talk.
He wanted to go move to Sweden or wherever we're in Switzerland.
Yeah, I was about to go. He's next door neighbors with Sebastian Vettel. I'm like, I'm going to schedule a trip, a vacation right now. So, I mean, when you start lining up these freaking world-class road course guys, right? I mean, you're leading points in the pinnacle of racing in Australia. Mike Rockenfeller, he did 24 hours at Le Mans in the Garage 56 car. A little bit of cup experience last year as a teammate of mine in the 77. And then SVG, who came in and won his first race. Mm-hmm. Where do you think you stack up against the actual ringers now and then as a collective group heading into the weekend?
Yeah, I think I'm very fortunate, like you said, to be with a key partner in RCR. They've, you know, they put a lot of work into their road course program. I think to answer your original, you know, question of why more people have been coming and being interested from internationals to come do it is mainly due to the fact that NASCAR is doing more road courses now. So there's more opportunity for it to happen, less scheduling conflicts, you know, with other series that, you know, for example, supercars back home. So I think, you know, my goal would be to...
Forgot about Kamui too.
Yeah,
Kamui, like Kobayashi. Kamui's racing. Yeah. I mean, holy cow.
The legend.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And he's not... That's the thing too, is like, I think about Marcus and...
Ambrose.
Yeah, Marcus Ambrose, because he was like fiery. You know, when I lived with George, I had to know Marcus well, and I wonder... like how much better he would have been in if he had even equipment to everybody else. Because I think his talent exceeded the ride that he was in the whole time he was here. So, and he was able to, I mean, have one of the best finishes in NASCAR history. He put himself in position at Sonoma and Watkins Glen. But if you take this schedule and this car and move it back to when he was here,
he'd win every road course race.
Well, I mean, he would probably have enough points to move him further up in the playoffs. And there was times at Vegas and
Michigan,
you know, tracks where Charlotte. Charlotte, where he would like show up, but you didn't know how much of that was like, okay, the team hit something this week. Cause he was, dude, Marcus Ambrose, really good.
Yeah. I mean, he won a championship back home. So he was, he left at the top to, you know, to come over here and do what he did. So I was able to follow his career when I was a young fellow.
But that's the thing now, like when Corey, perfect example, like when you get in the 9 car, that you can miss it and run 30th on your setup. And back when Marcus was doing it, if you were in the 9 car, you were running no worse than 15th on a bad day.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, it's so even. So even though it's just the timing that's working out, it couldn't be a better time in our sport for guys to come over. Cause like I said, it's, you're not coming over and driving
30
box car, right? You're running an RCR car.
Yeah.
And Shane's running a track house car. Kobayashi's running a 2311 car. You know, these are all cars that
our race
could go deep into the playoffs if you guys were doing it full time. That's what's super interesting to me, and that's what I like about kind of where we're at as a sport on the car side and on the schedule side.
Yeah, I like too the challenge. I bet you it lit a fire in me, but I'm sure it put everybody on notice of like, ooh, almost like, you know, like we might not be the only ones out here that can drive a car well in a circle, right? Like there's some other dudes out there on the other side of the pond that can come in here and teach us how to do it. So I'm curious to the effort level on the full-time driver side of where, how much more, I'm sure that a Kyle Larson gets in the simulator this week when he usually doesn't. I'm sure Chase Elliott probably flies in a couple days early.
Kyle Larson's at the Knoxville Nationals. He ain't doing
Okay, maybe not. He might play it on Xbox. Or
I still think you're looking at it wrong, though, like from a point of being on notice. Like,
tell me.
Where can you go practice at a street course?
Never. And yeah, that's true.
Not on iRacing because he couldn't make it to the fourth corner.
But it's completely different. You can just crash and reset. So yep. Whereas you know, we've, true. Yeah, like I said before, we race them back home all the time. So it's all about experience, really, at the end of the day.
You guys are going to repave the Thunderdome before long. Is that what that was? That's what it's called there?
Yeah. So they, the Thunderdome, they actually just did their first race back there around Kohler Park this week, funnily enough.
Really?
Is it
repaved, ready to rock?
Nope. It's still worn out.
Even better. Is it, what's it like, Rockingham?
It's probably to that level of being like Rockingham. So I'm hoping they bring it back and do a supercar race on ovals. Bro. And then you can come down and whoop our ass.
I would take that deal. Now, would we go counterclockwise?
Well, I would say so. I think that's what they did when they ran Oscar.
So they ran
right hand. You'd still keep right hand drive, and you would turn right.
Yeah, you go the other way, the opposite way.
Holy shit.
Well, you're on the other side of the equator, so you have to.
Toilet goes the other way.
Toilet goes the other way.
Just gonna ask that. Just it trips you out
dude,
at first.
But I mean, it's just like they're going to draw the parallels of it and look at like, do you race sprint cars for fun too?
I do, yeah.
I just
I've just started. So last year I did one race, and I've done four races this year. And
are they 410s?
Yeah, 410s.
Jeez,
yeah.
Hey, let's just go. What are you doing Tuesday night? Let's just go have some fun, run 410.
Yeah, let's go wrestle a kangaroo and drive a 410 sprint car. Like what? I don't know.
I love it.
I ride bikes with my kid in the neighborhood. No wonder why these guys come in to smoke.
Yeah.
So where do you think? What would be a good day? As you fly home with the 24-hour flight or however long it is, and you fly back, how do you leave the racetrack feeling like it was a good weekend?
Yeah, I'm a really competitive person, as well as probably everyone that's in the sport. So, but I've tried to do as much research and try to learn as much as possible. And I think I don't think speed would be too much of a problem. It's going to be about the execution. Like you hit on, and just simple things like pit road. We have speed limiters, don't have that for these cars, so it's something that we have to learn. And if I could finish in the top 10 but show good speed would be a good thing for me, I think. But I think that will be quite tough.
What about just beating SVG? Heads up. A little bit of bragging rights going back home.
I hope I get to race him on the track at some point because our rules back home are so tight. Like, you can't bump and run.
Yeah, and you just shove him off into one, keep going.
I've been wanting to do that for years.
I might collectively go see every driver and say if they want to put some money in a pool that I'll do it. That's a joke, by the way.
Here, I got a couple $100 on this right now.
Well, I think, like, genuinely, I think, and, like, especially how he's talking, I don't think that the regular guys are going to be as nice as they were when he came the first time. Like, I think they might use you guys up a little bit. But
now, because there was only a lane and a half worth of dry road at Chicago.
And there were single file restarts, which was a huge deal.
And there was single file restarts, so he could put somebody in a bad spot, and you would just not even contest, right? Like, if he showed a nose, you're not going to go barrel it down in there because your rights are going to be in the water and you're going to crash like Kyle Busch did seven times. Like,
or like the 20 car did, right? With like
inches next to the wall and it speeds up and you hit the tire barriers, right? Like, but now if it's dry, I mean, every brake zone's contested, you know, and you're getting run off on, like, there's no track limits more or less. So yeah, it is going to be a little bit of a different ball game. But knowing you enough and going to the racetrack with you enough, you are not scared to get your elbows out and give it right back too. What do you think about that? Do you think
you just set me up here every single question? No. You grinning. I can see it on your face.
What would they? I'll give you one that you can't answer here. What would they do? Because they call it's kind of like Formula One a little bit, where they call like penalties if
you run into stewards.
It's stewards and it's very tight.
Would the stewards office just light on fire watching the restarts that you had to watch from last year's Indy? Like, would they just be like, everybody's disqualified, Pat, load your and go home?
I'm actually not joking. That would be the case.
Really?
It's very, like, Shane and I have had some really, really good races this year where it's been, you know, we've been rubbing each other and, you know, the rules are so tight where he's gotten a 5-second penalty, I've got a 5-second penalty, and it's completely different. So, yeah, I wish our sport back home was more like how it was here, where it's respect-driven. So if you go and push someone off in a corner, the next corner you can expect it back. And
yeah.
And whereas back home, it's not like that. You race to the ruling.
Really? So you don't, like, if you spin somebody out, you're getting...
Yeah, you're turfed anyway. Really? So whereas here, it's... Yeah,
what does turf mean?
Turf means you're gone. Yeah, you...
Oh, like put your shit in the turf.
Yeah, you're turfed, yeah. Oh. Yeah,
when George first moved here, he would say stuff all the time. And I go, put another shrimp on the Bobby. He goes, we don't even call him shrimp, mate. We call him prawns.
I never got that here too. And you used to be really bad for it with Fosters.
I would say all the time. I was ready to get out of here, get a Foster's.
Yeah. So do you go to
Outback? It's not even Australian beer.
Do you go to Outback?
It's nothing like it. It's a marketing scheme.
So you don't have boomerangs? What the hell's going on?
We do have boomerangs.
He's got one in my backpack.
What the hell's going on?
Oh, man. Okay.
These are the hard-hitting questions that people really want to know. It's nice that the cars are the same and they got locked in, but do you have boomerangs? That's what we need to know.
I got a nice collection of boomerangs, actually. Yeah.
And what is your pet kangaroo's name? This is all that we have.
The other thing, too. That it's like a common question I get or got here when I was a young guy is, how often do you see a kangaroo? And it's like a deer. It's not. Yeah. It's really often.
When you see one, are they usually dead on the side of the road or are they still living?
You do see them living sometimes, but yeah, there is a fair bit of...
But you don't with them whenever you see them?
No, not unless you, like your life. Yeah, some of them are very angry.
I would...
Have you seen how they stand up on their tails?
Yeah, claws and...
Yeah, they're not very nice.
Just like every other guest, I'm excited to ask you the three questions I ask all the other guests on the show. I asked these to SVG, ask them Richard Petty, everybody in between. Question number one. If you had to pick one type of car and one racetrack to race at the rest of your life, what do you go with?
Oh, that's a tricky one. It'd probably actually be a supercar around Bathurst. I really enjoy that track, and risk versus reward is incredible. You've seen Scotty's laps. You told me before.
Do yourself a favor and just YouTube Scotty McLaughlin's lap at Bathurst.
Yeah, it's incredible.
But when a track looks unbelievably elevated on TV, I can only imagine how much it is in real life. Is it absurd?
I remember the first time I went up Conrad Straits, the back straight, I got sick.
Really?
Yeah, I actually got
sick. Because it's in a race,
in a car?
Yeah, I got the worst thing. Yeah, I
was like coming back down. Do your ears pop when you come back down?
Nah, but it's like you. It's hard to do it justice. Like you have photos and stuff, and when you're doing the track walk, it's like going down the mountain is like trying to climb Bristol. Would be the
that much of an incline.
It is incredible. Yeah, and it's all blind.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Because like I remember watching some in cars from like George's Ute, and I'm like, holy shit, you can't see.
Yeah, it's all blind.
So you have to like memorize the track.
Yeah, very much so. So,
dude, that is so gnarly. So supercar, a current supercar at Bathurst.
Yeah.
So how does the Bathurst 1000, which is y'all's Daytona 500? Mm-hmm. How do they? So it's a team race, right?
It
so
is.
You have co-drivers.
We have a co-driver. Yeah.
How do you, where do you get the co-driver from?
Anywhere.
Because. You could.
You're looking for a
that's
job?
Also a big. That's a championship points paying event, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a big.
So if you're leading points, and you go to the Bathurst 1000, who do you like? Whoever you pick to be your teammate is pretty crucial, right? Because that guy's not going for championship points. You are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important, but it's also
where do you get them from? Like the Xfinity quote unquote Dunlop 2 series.
Or? Yeah, there's other series that race at home as well, like GT, GT3, or there's the Porsche Cup Series back home. So there's plenty of good guys that can fill in and jump in. Ex-supercar guys that have retired, and they'll come out for twice a year to come do it. So there's plenty of good guys around.
Where does that race stack up in your championship?
Oh, it's very important. I mean, our...
No, like 1 to 12. Like,
we're 3 rounds away from it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's at the end.
I couldn't tell you what number it is. I don't even know when my next race is. Mm. I'm terrible with that stuff.
Yeah.
What race could we do that for the Cup Series?
Two drivers?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have doors, so it'd be too hard to get in and out.
Oh, it is easier to get in a Cup car than
really?
It is to get in a supercar at the moment.
Really?
It is, yeah.
because the window's so small.
It's a bit of a interesting without new cars. So I enjoyed getting in and out of the cup car.
I will say, I have an observation.
What's that?
I was looking at his calves. Yep. SVG has nicer calves than Brody does.
He does have nice calves.
He's got some nice calves.
He shaves them too.
Does he? I can see that. I would show them some bitches off too.
I need to know. Before we get too far along, there's one thing I need you to do. Can you do the champagne bottle where you smash it and it shoots up in the air?
I haven't done it this year.
But you know how to do that?
I know.
That was the first time I've ever seen it in my life is when he did it in Chicago. I've never seen anything like
that. That's pretty smooth.
Yeah, he's real good at it.
I need you to give me some pointers because the next race I went, I don't care what it is. I'm doing that. If I go to dinner and there's a champagne bottle, I'm like, hey, I learned something. So, yeah, before you leave, I got to have some pointers on that.
Mm. Question number two. Did I insult you about your calves?
No.
Okay. Question number two.
Well, that's soft.
What's the most embarrassed you've been at the racetrack?
I reckon it's probably, I've been embarrassed many times at racetrack here when I was living here when I was a young fella. You know, it was our own family car, like you knew, and obviously gone and running K&N and not running very well, and it was good equipment, it just wasn't executed well. And then obviously when you come in and help us out a fair bit, that was probably when I was at my most embarrassed, I would say.
Nice.
Yeah. So no, not when you were there.
Don't blow smoke up my ass now.
Not when you were there prior to that. So.
Was there any like specific incident though?
Yeah.
Like not just running wise, but like something that happened, like pants fell down, like Corey's did at Harvick's house or anything like that.
Goodness.
No, I'd probably. I reckon, do you remember when they did the battle at the beach?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't puke on yourself like Donnie Leah did, so you're ahead of the game.
No, my seatbelts kept coming undone and I don't even know why. I think my arm kept hitting it. So that was probably and I was running third at the time. So that was.
Did you keep it going or you pull off?
Well, it got closer towards the end and everyone started wrecking. And I went, maybe not.
Well, you probably wouldn't be leading V8 supercar points if you just stayed on the race.
Yeah.
You probably made a good decision.
Yeah. I lasted 40 or 50 laps at that. But yeah, that was pretty embarrassing.
Daniel Quinn did that at Bristol for 100 laps.
Daniel Quinn did that. They're like, what's wrong?
Yeah. Yes. Nobody said Daniel Quinn was the smartest guy, but God love him. Question number three. If you had to lose every one of your racing memories and keep one, what do you keep?
I would probably keep 2020 when I got I was a co-driver in 2020 at Bathurst, and I drove with the team I'm driving for now as a co-driver, and that performance there gave me that drive that I have now. So, and I got to race Shane's teammate at the time, and that got me my gig that I'm in today. So I would lose them all for that.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Just your pace, your professionalism. What was it that they're like, ooh, this kid's got it?
I was fast when I drove the car, and I was out of place at the time. I was in the car against the main drivers as a co-driver, and that rarely happens often in that race. They try to keep him, you know, aligned. And so I had to race, you know, Shane, Jamie, his teammate Jamie Wincup.
Yeah.
And I was racing Jamie and he made a mistake and ended up crashing. So
you got in his head.
That was a career defining moment for me.
Are you on the younger side of guys over there, being 25, or what's like the?
I would be one of the youngest at the moment. Yeah. Like there's a few young guys that have stepped in, but me and my teammate are both 25, we're pretty young.
That you and Shane come over here and start racing full time. So, in that case, NASCAR or America, we'll just say that, has stolen three of the V8 Supercar's best guys. Do they just declare all that war on us, or what happens?
Like, do they come over here and snag Kyle Larson? Like, what do they do?
I saw something where they were like, Shane, why are you doing better this year? He's like, oh, because Scotty f***ed off to America. Like, that's what he said in the interview. And I'm like, damn, if Shane comes over here, then we get Brody.
I forgot about, I didn't even think about McLaughlin.
Yeah, because Scotty was, doing it. And then comes over here and...
doing it in IndyCars.
I mean, what he's been able to do to learn downforce and them things has been...
That's been incredible to watch him go through that process. He never raced any open wheelers growing up as a kid either. He just went straight into cars straight away. And it was pretty, when everyone saw that he was going into cars, everyone was like, wow, like what a, like if you're going to go big, he went big.
Big step.
Dude, yeah. Guy's not scared.
He wheels
though. Did you talk to him much or?
Yeah, I stay in touch with Scotty quite a bit. And when I got my first full-time gig, I sort of lent on him a fair bit and tried to, he was the qualifying master back home. Like he was the man that could put down that one lap and qualifying, and I tried to, you know, extract most out of him as possible when he left. So
Who has given you the best advice going into the weekend?
Oh, that's a tricky question.
Me, yeah. Talking about pit road.
I hope you give me some good advice before I leave. But I'd probably say coming through when I went back home, I got a lot of good advice from Paul Morris, who's actually helping Shane out a fair bit at the moment. And
he's a trader.
Yeah, he's pretty close with Dale Jr. as well over here. So
who?
Paul Morris.
Does he live over there?
He lives over there. Yep. Yeah. So Jr. actually went to Australia. I want to say 2009 and drove one of his supercars.
Really?
Yeah. So they're actually quite tight. And he's given me a lot of good advice over the years. So I'd probably
What about SVG? Does he say anything, or is he like close to the chest?
He doesn't say much.
Yeah.
He doesn't say much. Yeah, he's pretty tight.
Marcus around much? You ever reach out to him or?
No, actually, when he went back home, he went out to the bushes somewhere in Tasmania and built a bunch of houses. And
really?
Yeah, it was. He sort of disappeared a little bit and just maybe wanted to enjoy his quiet life with his family. So,
yeah.
But he finally come back to supercars and did some commentating. Mm. So I got to talk to him a little bit and see what he's been up to. And I haven't spoken to him prior to coming here, but I've been trying to talk to people and learn as much as possible and tried to get some out of Shane, but it's very hard.
Why on Wikipedia is your nickname Bush?
Well, so Paul Morris has a track. He has his own racetrack.
Okay.
And that's they do a lot of driver coaching there and whatnot. So he's probably one of the best in the world for driver coaching for, road course stuff. He's very good at what he does and the way he explains how to work a car to the best of his abilities is unreal. So, it was 2019 and I stopped in there. I was actually dropping something off. And it was pissing down with rain. Like it was, you couldn't even see.
Is that a lot or is it like a little trickle?
No, that is like, you cannot see.
Okay.
Yeah. Like the storm we had here yesterday, you can't see anything.
Yeah.
And he had these two cars that got dropped off by a wrecker. And there were two VT Commodores, V6. And he goes, let's go out and do some drifting, have some fun. We'll do a bit of racecraft training. He just wanted to have some fun. Mm-hmm. And so I was with my cousin, my two cousins, Kurt and Jake, and we're out there. We're running into each other, having a good time, like just destroying these things. And it started to dry up a little bit. And of course, they're just road cars that were going to get crushed. So they got stock brakes on them. And so then we started hot dogging them a fair bit. And Kurt goes to Kurt, who you've met, went to jump in. And he's like, the brakes feel a bit funny. And I went, don't risk it. We're racing the next week in the Super 2 Series. And I said, don't risk it. If it's, if it's feels funny, let's just, let's just call it
a day.
We've had our fun for an hour and a half.
Go
and he goes, I'll do a cool down lap. So he does a cool down lap. And and he goes, I think they're okay now. And no shit. We went down the back straight, so we're doing like 130 kilometers an hour, so probably like 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, and it goes into a real tight hairpin. And so Paul's driving the other car and Kurt's driving this car and I'm in the passenger seat, and he goes to hit the brake pedal and I remember it to this day, he looks at me and goes, no brakes. So I unbuckle my seatbelt and jumped out.
What?
I jumped out at 100, like 70 miles an hour. Yeah, so, and
what'd you land on?
In the bush.
Yeah, so, I have a story. So, I've jumped out and I've slid along the grass for maybe 300 meters. I don't know, like an eighth of a mile.
That doesn't even cross my mind.
Yeah, so I've slid. I've lost all my clothes because obviously I've gone through grass and mud and it's torn all my clothes off, and I've slid up the earth embankment. And my cousin, Kurt, has rode this thing into a tree. Right. So Paul pulls up to the car and it was raining hard enough to where you couldn't really see. So he didn't see me jump out. So he pulls up to this car and he sees Kurt's hopped out and he's like, couldn't breathe because he's, hit the steering wheel that hard that he's broken his sternum.
Oh my.
So Paul pulls up to the car and he's like, have I killed, these two kids?
Yeah.
At my track. And so Kurt jumps out. He's like laying on the ground. And he's like, you all right? And he goes, yeah, I'm all right. And he goes, and then he starts laughing. Paul starts laughing and then Kurt starts laughing. And he goes, shut up. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And he goes, where's Brody? And then Kurt goes, he jumped out. And he goes, what? He jumped out. And then I start walking over back from the earth embankment that I've ended up in. And I got sticks hanging out of my ass.
No clothes on.
Going on, and I couldn't even see because I was literally black from all the mud that I was covered in. I walk over and I had nothing wrong with me, surprisingly, but I walked over to the car and the transmission ended up in the passenger seat.
Holy
So the engine, the engine moved back so far that it pierced through the tunnel, and so it wouldn't have been too good for me if I stayed in the car. So I was pretty happy about that.
Oh my goodness,
dude! Who thinks about that? Like, I'm just gonna eject button here.
Let's rewind that story to the point of where he looks over and says, "I have no brakes. I have no brakes." Did you run through a list of like, I can ride this out?
Yeah,
I'm gonna say a quick prayer. I'm gonna jump out, tuck and roll.
No, but do you know why it happened? Do you remember that time we went testing at Greenville on the K&N car?
Remind me. I got
throttle stuck. I went into the wall at turn one.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I fractured my wrist at part of it. So when he said the brakes were feeling a bit funny, I started thinking
PTSD.
I started actually thinking of times like that, and I was like, I'm not doing that.
You're not riding it out.
I'm not riding. I'm done. I am done with that stuff.
looking for the bush.
Yeah, I'm not doing that again. So yeah, we kept that quiet for a while, and then the story eventually got out. Yeah.
So that's where Bush came from. I did not expect that.
Yeah.
So. That's a hell of a story.
That was. Yeah. We're going to wrap it up because of that. Oh, my goodness. It doesn't get any better than that. Well, Brody, I wish you well this weekend. Good luck. I'm excited to race again with you. And, any shout-outs for your partners? You got a bunch of them on your T-shirt. Give a couple shout-outs to the partners.
Yeah, I think, MobileX, Pete Addison, he founder of Boost Mobile here in America. He's started up another business here. It's been in the works for a few years now. And a lot of partners back home, Shorten Partners and the team. My team from back home, Erebus Motorsport, they've been working closely with RCR and trying to help, both sides out, and as well as Richard and everyone at RCR for giving me such a great opportunity, and can't wait. So
awesome.
Yeah, don't run into me.
Yeah, you're getting run into.
No guarantees, buddy. And I only run into people I respect. So, I mean, last couple weeks, man, I've had some people frustrated with me. We're going to talk about
his friends
more.
Have been punching him, yelling at him.
Yeah. Ryan Preece hits me in the helmet. Ryan Blaney. They're all named Ryan, too, so you should be a good kid. Your name's not Ryan. He's mad at me now, too. Join the Ryan list. There you go. I appreciate you jumping in the studio with us, buddy. It was a good time.
Thank you.
Hey, guys, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Brody Kostecki. We ran a little long this week, so we're going to get our Penny for Your Thoughts questions and the Penny Stacker of the Week in Spare Change this Sunday before the race. So tune into that, but make sure you guys like, download, share, rate, review, all the things, and keep stacking pennies. This is Stacking Pennies, presented by Mobile One.